Anna Sheridan, missing for nearly 6 months now.
That's not possible. How did I
Someone with a more vivid imagination might decide she'd pierced the veil. There's no place for ghost stories in this investigation, or any other.
I need you to find me.
The Sheridan Tapes, a serialized horror mystery podcast. Stream the complete series today on Realm and on all podcasting platforms.
Welcome, everyone, to another edition of IGN Unfiltered, my monthly interview series where I get to sit down with the best, brightest, most interesting minds in the games industry. This month, our IGN first game that we're covering all month long is Shadow Warrior 3, a first-person shooter, fast, frantic. I'm really looking forward to playing it. In the meantime, though, I've got the game director here, Kuba Opon. Thank you so much, Kuba, for making the time.
Thank you.
So I want to start. Are you at home right now? Are you at the office? Because that is a very cool, like, I've seen a lot of backdrops during quarantine as I film these. But that is, I'm digging that art behind you there.
Yeah, that's a bit of a trip of down to the, you know, memory lane, as this is, you know, great art from the first Shadow Warrior. And I am at the Flying Wild Hog offices, which sadly are not, you know, operating at the full capacity, but, you know, we can still use this beautiful room that we've got. The conference rooms are all, you know, with the art that we've created over the years, because, you know, we are very proud of it. It's just great.
Yeah, you were telling me right before we started that you guys moved into that. It was a new office that you moved into a month before the pandemic.
Yes, yes, that's the sad part. You know, we grew a lot, our studio grew a lot during last years. So we needed to expand, and that was, you know, great opportunity to create this, take the new floor in the building that we are occupying. And we wanted to do it, you know, this time we wanted to do it with all our branding, with our, you know, colors that we usually use to feel like, you know, this basically like a new, fresh company, of course, with everything we've done so far, but, you know, to celebrate the things that we've done to this point. And yeah, just a month here, and then the lockdown started in Poland, so we moved to work from home, basically.
Well, how has the work from home gone for your team? I mean, it seems like it's affected everyone differently. And so how has it been for your team? Because I think is it fair to say you have a medium sized team? Is it? And so how has it been for your group?
Overall, I think that most of the companies that went to work from home, and from my just what I'm reading, you know, online, and how the other people experience it, I feel there is a kind of a pattern that we all felt at the beginning. We all felt that we can do more because there was less chit chat, less of the office thing, and the productivity went up, and that was very, you know, interesting to see. But it's for the long term, it's complicated. It's a complicated thing, because when your home changes to a workplace, it starts to get weird after some time, and people have very different situations. So I suppose that's similar to everywhere. Obviously, we are doing, you know, the best to support each other, to contact, to check on the people, to provide some help if that's needed. Like, you know, all the things we could imagine to just try and test. So right now we are very happy that, you know, the vaccinations are happening, that we are just counting days to we could get back to the office. Because obviously when you're making games, you need to talk to people. You need to just have the creative juices flowing. So that's something that we definitely would like to get back to. And, you know, just to choose to be as productive, and like, it's not like we aren't, but it's something that's difficult just to manage, right?
Yeah, are you guys hoping, you think that is the timing maybe going to work out where you can launch the game together in the office, back in the office, and have a launch party? Or do you think it's looking like you're all going to have to launch it from home and one person gets to be the lucky person that presses the submit button for Steam and for the Sony and Microsoft submission?
I'm still, you know, it's a question about, you know, how our nationwide politics going to work in terms of vaccination. So I just cannot give the answers. I suppose we end up with some kind of hybrid format eventually, and that will be just the first step to, you know, figure out how to work post-pandemic. But, you know, so many people don't know how it's going to end. I'm not the best person to, you know, get deep into this. I really don't know. I just wish that, you know, we you know, will make the game as best as possible, even in these conditions. And, you know, we'll just take our time and figure out how to do it properly.
Yeah, we don't know either for IGN, for whatever it's worth. Like, we don't know when we're going back and how we're going back. That's all. Yeah, it's a whole new world. But so I want to talk about your career a little bit. Looking you up, you came up as a programmer at Bloober Team, and then you continued to serve as a programmer here at Flying Wild Hog prior to finally now becoming the game director on Shadow Warrior 3. So I'm curious, how has the experience of being a programmer helped you as a game director?
So, you know, it's a long journey, maybe not as long as the game directors in the United States, as I feel like or you know, in the countries where the game dev has a longer history. But my 12 years, you know, in game dev in Poland was, I would say very interesting for me, at least. So, you know, I was a big gamer. I love games and everything. That's, you know, the usual thing. I played a lot of, you know, Quake or things like that. And, you know, at some point I just wanted to know how the games are made. It was very tempting for me to know the insides of it, right? So finally I landed a first job. I didn't know much, you know, like a junior programmer. And the first, you know, years, the Bloober Team, just like the 3 years, was just to understand how the team works, like how much team focused this thing that we are doing is, right? How you need a lot of different people, the artists, how communication is important and everything. But it's just let me, you know, to understand how to cooperate. And after the 3 years, I joined Flying Wild Hog, and I'm here since then. And when I joined, they were looking for the AI programmer. So I didn't know anything about that as well, but I learned as I go. But I jumped in. I've got, you know, great mentors. And, you know, the story of the Flying Wild Hog, like my story of the Flying Wild Hog, was the one, like, I've joined the team that I finally met, I very quickly met a lot of people that, you know, the games I admired as a, like, teenager, like the Painkiller, then, you know, the people that made Bulletstorm and Witcher. So, you know, all the big hits of Polish game dev from that time. So it was for me like something totally, you know, wow. It's just all these people I can learn from. So that was also great. And then the company, like, culture of how they make games here was very interesting to me, as it appeared that, you know, as a programmer, I can have really lots of input in very different places. Like, I can just make conversations with the character artist, with the, you know, with the audio guy and the VFX team, cooperating with, you know, animators. I figured out that at some point I just could even bring my own ideas, and then became like partially in the designer's shoes. Just creating my own ideas in, like, for the boss fights or things like that. And that was very, you know, that was feeling great, right? Because we want to make games, but also we want to just place part of our ideas there to make our own. And what Flying Wild Hog did, and what was very fresh for me, is like, yeah, you have a great idea, like you have an idea, show us, right? And if they work, great, we have something better, the game is better by that. And that's basically the team feeling and the approach of making games here that I really loved, and it works since then. Haven't failed, and I'm really happy how it's going. And so, you know, with that in mind, I became very self-sufficient, so somebody probably trusted me that I can then, either introduce idea, implement, and then maybe find the people and get them together somehow, and just make things happen and work and get to the finishing line. So I became a lead game programmer on the Shadow Warrior 2. So, you know, now I'm managing team. I'm learning about the new things, about how to, you know, manage people needs and how to help them delivering, how to communicate the whole teams together, you know, just to deliver the next iteration. So then we have a short break when we were building our studio. After Shadow Warrior 2, we had this, we sat down, we thought what to do. We do some prototypes, we do some, we try to figure out where to go with our studio. We decided that we need to grow, and then we start to building the, we've built like three studios, two additional ones, right? Right now we have like three studios. And we changed our engine during that time. And, you know, this was the transformation period. And then we ended up, you know, ready to tackle the next challenge. And one of these challenges is Shadow Warrior 3. And, you know, at this point, I'm not sure I could say I was, you know, feeling ready to become a game director. This is something you, I think, cannot learn. You need to learn as you go. I've made it like during my, 2 years, something around 2 years. It was a lot of, mistakes that I've made that I need to learn. I need to learn quickly. I need to reiterate some things and change some things. But yeah, this is quite a journey for me, and I'm really happy where I am, and this is, this is my dream job. I thought I can be a programmer, maybe a lead, or just implement some of my ideas, and now that's basically what I'm doing, is discussing not my ideas but everyone's ideas and trying to figure out how to make a cohesive thing out of it, and this is great.
Sounds like a wonderful work culture at Flying Wild Hog, where everyone's ideas, regardless of their discipline, are encouraged. And as a result, the game gets better. Everyone feels like they have more agency and say in the game. And you're a walking example of you have those skills, that ability to have the input in the game has helped you learn new skills and grow your career to now becoming a game director. So that's exactly, I think, what you want to have at any company. That sounds great. So it's that's really great to hear. I do want to back up for a second, though. When you mentioned, you started talking about your history with programming, are you entirely self-taught as a programmer?
Not really, but it's hard to. I learned relatively late to program because I wasn't. I just have some very brief experience with like some web page programming when I was in high school, but I went to the college IT, but I don't have much too much interesting things to say about what I learned, how I learned to program there. I learned to program a bit on my own support, and with the knowledge I can find it in just game dev books and things like that, and obviously on the internet. But I really quickly just get the opportunity to start in the game dev because my friend already was there, and he just introduced me I've made a test. I managed to do like a quick Tetris clone on my first interview, and somehow I got in. But I really couldn't do much more than that in the long run. So I learned everything as I go, and you know, that was the college, the real programming college for me. Just the job. It's way more programming and solving actual issues that, you know, in the real organism, not some artificial problems that are tested. So I love that way more, and what I was learning there.
Well, you mentioned Quake and that you were sort of curious how it worked. Did you play around at all with Quake C and do any like mod work or programming work?
A little bit. I've managed to compile it. I've managed to change a couple of parameters, like make the rocket fly, you know, faster. There's like simple things, but at this point, I didn't have the C skills. At this moment, when I was a teenager, I didn't have the C skills, and I didn't get to that skills, you know, in time when I was playing Quake. So it didn't, you know, it wasn't at the same time. But I was, you know, trying to do. I was searching for people. Then I didn't have good contacts with people who made the games. But I tried to get into the modding community. Eventually, I didn't. My real career start, you know, when I was in college. But that was, you know, I was always curious about it. So there was always something. I just lacked the, you know, the contacts, the people that could guide me somehow. So
was Quake always one of your favorites? What were your favorite games as a kid?
You know, I started earlier on, you know, in, probably you heard that story from some Polish developers, but we had this clone of, you know, Nintendo called Pegasus. So we've been playing the games like, you know, Dizzy and Mario and Super Mario there. But I would say that my, you know, inspiration came from that period of playing Quake. That's the first one that came to my mind, because I'm still do like shooters, especially that they're a fast one, and I wanted to do like one of the fastest in the market. So that's why, you know, all of these crazy things in Shadow Warrior 3 happen, like why we are moving so fast, why we are flying around. It's not, you know, it's not the taking the same ideas, it's just taking the same impression of like speed and controlling the environment and everything. So I feel that was the main driver, right? Also, there's some, you know, I really like just adventure games like Uncharted series, because I like the lightness of it, the humor, the pure joy that I just take from just enjoying the story, the characters and everything. And I also feel like this is something that I a bit steal when I'm talking about Shadow Warrior, how I would like this game to be felt when you play it. I like people have fun and be joyous about it and just have a laugh and spend time, you know, nicely, you know, and be happy.
As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch, and organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business, from the launch your online shop stage all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S., Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/realm. As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch, and organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business, from the launch your online shop stage all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/realm.
So
I, as an old school Quake fan myself, I'm curious, are you talking Quake 1 or
Quake
3?
No, I'm talking Quake 3. These are my high school years.
Love it. Although, ironically, of course, back then it was Quake 3 versus Unreal Tournament. You're a Quake guy. Now you're working in Unreal Engine.
That's true.
How is it, in all seriousness, I'm kind of, you hear gamers, us, non-developers like me, hear all the time about Unreal Engine and that it's a great engine, great tools, it looks great on the screen. So how is it working with Unreal compared to other game engine, game development tools that you've worked with? And I'm curious, what is Shadow Warrior 3 doing with Unreal Engine 4 that say, Shadow Warrior 1 and 2 couldn't do? I'm sort of curious to hear about that.
So this is part of the transformation that our studio underwent, because we've switched to the Unreal Engine from our own technology called Rotor Engine. Like, the Flying Wild Hog is a studio which was built by programmers, and their own technology at that point was, the key thing, and it was obvious because the licenses and everything were not that available. So, and it was great to the certain point when we needed to have the very tough discussion and had some, parental feelings about the engine that we've built here and, how to, because at some point it was like an arms race, right? When you were building the studio, building your own technology, when you're not that big studio, you want to grow, but you need to hire a lot of engine programmers. And of course, there's some technology on the market that we need to basically compare ourselves, and they are built by, bigger groups of people. So obviously, Rotok engine has its own set of cool features that we liked, but and jumping into the Unreal makes us do what we always wanted to do, which is make games, not the tools. And that's the key thing. There were so things that worked just out of the box. That was one thing. And then we wanted to grow. And bringing people here and have this, wonderful piece of technology, which we all know how it, looks, how it works. And they can start working with us almost instantly. There's no, We don't have to provide our own, you know, documentation and everything. It just works, right? So the knowledge is there. The people right now starting work, you know, in game dev have so many options to learn the Unreal. It's available. It's just great because, you know, the industry can grow. We can have much more people that know the technology, and we can do basically everything there.
Are you now, obviously, Shadow Warrior 3 is shipping with Unreal Engine 4, but looking ahead, are you excited about Unreal Engine 5 based on what you've seen and heard about that from Epic?
Oh, definitely. That's look incredible. I cannot wait to just, you know, to see how it works, how you work in that environment. So yeah, it's very impressive what they shown.
Now, you mentioned you were the lead AI programmer on Shadow Warrior 2 before becoming the game director on Shadow Warrior 3. What to you, and I wonder if this maybe will go back to your Quake days a little bit with competing against humans. What makes good AI in a first-person shooter to you? What is it in a shooter that would make AI be good AI?
It still really depends on what game you want to make. Do you want to have an opponent that's equal to you, for example, like in Quake 3 days, and you need a bot that's basically replicating human? So that's different set of, you know, problems that you need to solve than what we are doing right now. Because for me in Shadow Warrior 3, it's not only the AI and the logic behind it. It's more about making just fun and creative puzzle for the player to solve, right, while he's on the battlefield. So each AI can need to serve certain purposes, and some of them aren't even that, you know, intelligent in that sense, but they need to have all the other things that are make them shine there, because they have certain roles and they need to fulfill that roles. And for that, I feel like not only the logic, the codes of the AI of itself, but, you know, the animations are really selling what the guy's doing, the sound and everything. So all the composition to just, for me, achieve the clarity of the battlefield. Like, you're seeing the map and you need to, you know, okay, this guy is doing that, this guy is doing that. You need to make the split-second decisions. And then make a decision about your arsenal and your movement and everything. So that's, for me, the clarity and the strict roles that the AIs have on the battlefield is very important. And also there's the, you know, the spatial relation, how they relate to each other, how they support the certain, you know, traps or things on the battlefield. So I don't know if that answers your question.
But
I'm looking for the clarity.
You look at it, like, it sounds to me like you really look at AI in Shadow Warrior from sort of a 10,000 foot view above. Like, you're looking almost like you're playing chess with it. Like, this, you know, this enemy needs to do this and have this role. So I find it interesting. I thought that was a great answer to the question. Now, okay. You've been at Flying Wild Hog for almost 9 years now, and that's a long time to be at one company in any field, but based on what I've read about game development, it seems to be an especially long time to be at one studio. So what do you attribute that to? It's your longevity at Flying Wild Hog.
Like, first and foremost, you know, like, at the start, I was, as I mentioned, I was just impressed by the, you know, by the skill set, by, you know, by the previous games, by the Hard Reset, which was great, and, you know, just to have the opportunity to work you know, with the guys that know so much and I can learn so much. But I just, the clear answer is, like, I just became friends with a lot of them. I really like work with them. I just feel happy here. And from, like, my career perspective, I'm always doing something new with each and every iteration of the project. For me, it's, I'm constantly challenged. I'm challenging myself. I'm making mistakes. I learn from them. It's, for me, a great place to develop myself as a person, as a colleague, as a team player. I have everything here, and I can be creative as well. So that just works here. I don't know.
That's exactly what you want. That's great. That's fantastic. Now, for your 10th work anniversary, 10 years, do you get like an actual flying wild hog, in cake form, or do you get anything special for the 10-year anniversary?
Actually, recently we've got the 12th anniversary of the studio, and there were the statues for the first. We did this 3D statues of the flying wild hog, the logo with the bronze and everything. So we actually have this kind of, you know, way of saying people that stayed too long, this long here, just thank you. And this is really, really great. As I really like the logo as well. So, you know, it's funny and kind of sells the vibe that we've got here. So.
You guys rebooted Shadow Warrior before id Software rebooted Doom, but you've both done an exceptionally great job at reinventing these two, you know, beloved 1990s shooter franchises. I'm just curious, what do you think of Doom and Doom Eternal?
I love these games. These are just, they are great. They are, you know, which 10 millions of players probably can say. I understand the comparisons that we've got on the comment sections in underneath, you know, the videos that we are, you know, sharing with the people, and I think I know why is that the issue, like the issue, why is that comparison happening? So I think that this came to the new edition of the finishers, and But we always, when we are adding something, we always wanted to do something, you know, different about the feature. So we wanted to make it ours, not just copy the ideas, obviously. So we've been thinking about the finishers, for example, like since first game, but we didn't know exactly what to do with them. And funny thing is, like, the first Shadow Warrior, the 97 one, got this, you know, weapons from the enemies, but it wasn't connected through the nice animation. They just drop on the ground and you can pick it up. So this is like, so we just turned the first circle and thought, like, whoa, this is the great thing that could, you know, support that, like, when you do a finishing move, it's not like you're ending the enemy and that's the end of the encounter. You're just starting, right? Because you're now getting something way stronger. So So I think that, you know, with that in mind, we just went with how to create something ours, how to make our game shine and be creative and different. So obviously there are comparisons, but we are always putting the accents on the things that make us different, like the katana, like the finishers, like the grapple hook, and, you know, wall running and everything, and the whole, you know, setting and everything. So. And the humor, the comedy, I'm really, you know, I'm really happy for the comparisons, but, you know, it's.
Yeah, now I am curious, since Doom Eternal ended up, you know, while you've been in development with Shadow Warrior 3, Doom Eternal came out last year. Was there anything in there when you played Doom Eternal that you went, oh, shoot, I wish we'd done that, or, oh, we're doing that? Like, I'm just sort of curious if that ever happens in game development, or if you just kind of don't worry about it and you're just focused on Shadow Warrior 3.
The we're doing that is the feeling that I think we've got throughout each and every game at some point. There's so many good games and so many ideas that you can draw from, and the games are just developing based on, you know, your experience. So if anyone is a gamer, he starts to work on that. Obviously, there could similar things just could happen because the environment is the same. It's very, like, similar. It's like fast-paced shooter and everything. So these things happen, but we never think of that like, oh no, we cannot do that because some other game is doing that. It's not how it works. The question is, will it make our game better? Then fine, let's go with it. I think. Our game has so much character on its own that it can stand and support on that. And every addition, if it benefits the game, then great. I suppose everyone will love it.
Now, you've been working on Shadow Warrior since the original reboot at Flying Wild Hog. So this is your third one now, long time. I'm curious, have you ever heard from any of the original 1997 Shadow Warrior developers from 3D Realms? And if so, I'm curious what they had to say to you about the new Shadow Warriors.
Frankly speaking, the short answer is no. There were some business, you know, discussions when we with the Devolver came with the proposition to work on that IP, but I don't recall any contacts later. We just, you know, went with it and do something on our own with the franchise, and that's how we are working since then. So, no.
Well, I mean, I was just kind of curious because that, you know, I'm sure there are some original Shadow Warrior developers that have played at least Shadow Warrior 1 or 2, and I mean, you made great games. I mean, I'm sure they enjoyed them. I was just sort of curious if they ever reach out and connect with you or not. But now I do need to ask, you know, obviously the cultural landscape has changed a lot just since the first Shadow Warrior reboot in 2013, let alone since the original in 1997. So I'm curious, you know, how is the team, excuse me, how is your development team being, you know, sensitive to and respectful of Asian culture? Are there Asian writers, voice actors? I just wonder if you could speak to that for a minute.
So, you know, we've been developing the game that had some, you know, baggage, and we, since the reboot, we were trying to be sensitive. Obviously, that things are changing as we go. And we are currently in the process, actually, to support that what's going on, and we are in the process of actually recasting the Shadow Warrior 3. So that's more or less, we are in the middle of this process, so we need some time to properly announce it and give the details. But this is how we are approaching that you know. That landscape that we are in, and we want to, you know, be just do the right thing.
That's great to hear. That is great to hear. We'll look forward to hearing more about that soon. Now, a couple more questions before I let you go. The Polish game development community has really gotten so much bigger over the years. I mean, you know, you've mentioned a couple of Techland, CD Projekt Red, 11-Bit Studios, Bloober Team, where you had been. You guys, obviously. Is there any friendly competition, or is it more everybody roots for each other? I'm just sort of curious what that game development community is like for you in Poland.
It's, you know, I think it's great what's happening here. Like the game dev in Poland is growing so fast, like any other industry, like no other industry here. And it's great that we became like the games we are making became like a stamp of Polish, like, you know, creativity, and actually, you know, it's a tough process of making games, so it's also says something about, you know, how good we are in like programming, or like how good artists do we have here. So it's, personally, I'm just rooting for everyone, because each and every hit makes me proud, and this is great that, you know, we have this kind of interesting people around just to build this great thing. So there's a big growth, a lot of new people, and that's just working great for everyone.
Love it. Well, the last question I have for you, we're going to hope that your PR person has gotten up to get a snack and isn't listening anymore. So Flying Wild Hog, when I was getting ready for this interview, I was reminded that your studio signed a deal to do a game with Focus Home Interactive. So I was just kind of curious, is there any little hints or anything you can tell me about that project?
I'm not on the team, and I'm just not, you know, the right person to speak about it.
Fair enough. A journalist has to try. Kuba Opon, thank you so much. I had a great time talking to you about your career and about Shadow Warrior 3, and I know it's out later this year, PC, PlayStation 4, Xbox One. We don't have a release date specifically as of yet, but are you guys doing well here? Is the team feeling good coming towards the end?
Yes, we're feeling strong. We are really happy. You know, we are really happy with the response we've got. I think the the comments are all but positive. So they're all positive and great, and it's we are feeling, you know, that we are doing the best the best Shadow Warrior possible, and yeah, it's going to be great.
Excellent. Kuba, thank you so much. I really appreciate you coming by.
Thank you, Ryan.
For more from the best, brightest, most interesting minds in the games industry, check back every month for another new episode of IGN Unfiltered.
Are you thinking about getting into Dungeons & Dragons? Maybe you're looking to expand your horizons as a DM or a player. If that's the case, then it's time for you to check out The Dungeon Cast, the best D&D podcast out there that helps you passively learn all about the game just by listening. Join co-hosts Will and Brian as they break down the lore of a rich multiverse 50 years in the making in a lighthearted and beginner-friendly way. They cover everything from character creation options to tips for dungeon masters. There's something for everyone, no matter how long you've been playing TTRPGs. Get inspired while learning all about the unique planes of existence. Get the in-depth knowledge you need to help your combat encounters feel impactful, or learn about the origins and pantheons of every race and class the game offers. No stone is left unturned as every edition of the game is explored and explained in a way that benefits players of all different levels of experience. You can expand your TTRPG horizons in a way that's as entertaining as it is educational just by listening. All you have to do is go to your favorite podcast app or YouTube and search for The Dungeon Cast.